This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 5th of February 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 5th of February, which this week have been edited by Keith and Linda Vincent. Now, your reader today, Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week: City sees rise in rule breaking, call to help with district's future, and medieval discoveries. So, Andrew, maybe have the headline the story behind the first headline, please.
And our first headline is City Sees Rise in Rule Breaking. A Winchester woman has been fined after her 14-year-old son was found breaking lockdown restrictions two nights in a row. Excuse me. The 52-year-old, who has not been named, has been reported for summons in relation to a fixed penalty notice, an FPN. This comes after patrolling officers stopped three boys on Wolford Close, Stanmore, at around 9 p.m. on January the 27th. After a search, a 14-year-old boy and a 15-year-old boy, neither can be named for legal reasons, were found in possession of cannabis. The 14-year-old had been dealt with the night before for verbally abusing police officers and swearing in the street on Rumsey Road. A Hampshire Constabulary spokesperson said, "The teen is being dealt with voluntarily under the public order offence and for the possession of cannabis along with the other boy. This is just one incident of breaking lockdown rules in Winchester since the start of the year. Another occurred on January the 29th. Five males were reported to police after being found congregating in the Gordon Street car park. They told officers they had come out for takeaway food from Southampton. All were from different households. As previously reported, four Winchester women were fined following a party during lockdown. Excuse me. They were reported for summons after officers were called to a property in Wales Street, Winall, on January the 23rd. Reacting to the rule-breaking, Steve Brine, MP, said, "Whatever the case rate in Winchester, and whatever we may individually feel about the latest lockdown measures, we all need to stick to the rules and act like we have the virus. Only by doing that can we end this sooner and start to reopen our society and our economy, which is being so badly damaged by the pandemic." It comes as new figures reveal that 592 fines have been handed out by Hampshire Police for breaches of COVID-19 laws since they came into force. Data published by the National Police Chiefs Council, the NPCC, on Thursday last week revealed that 42,675 FPNs have been recorded as having been issued in England and Wales under coronavirus regulations between Friday, March the 27th, and Sunday, January the 17th. In Hampshire, 22 fines were given for not complying with face covering regulations, and 27 for failing to follow business regulations, and 2 for breaking international travel laws. The majority of people fined were breaking local restrictions, with 77 fixed penalty notices issued in the current lockdown. No fines were handed out for holding a gathering of more than 30 people.
Call to help with district's future. City planners are calling on the public to help them influence the future of Winchester. The City Council is preparing its new local plan to run until 2038 and wants to hear the public's view on many issues. These include what form development should take, as the council has been told it needs to plan for around 700 new dwellings a year. Adrian Fox, strategic planning manager, speaking at the town forum last Thursday, said the consultation was not about specific sites, such as the 5,000-home Royal Downs scheme between Oliver's Battery and Hursley, Micheldever New Town, or Sir John Moore Barracks. There have been no decisions on any sites, he said. Questions included, is there a need for a green belt, or should development take the form of new settlements or be spread around the district? But it's not just a question of housing, but how people will live. Officers and councillors have been attracted by the idea of a 15-minute neighbourhood, areas that are not car-dependent, where walking and cycling can thrive. As well as the call for sites from potential developers, the council wants to hear about brownfield land and how to prepare for the low-carbon infrastructure, including renewable energy and battery storage sites. Mr. Fox said, "We are particularly keen on using brownfield sites, keen to hear from people who know of brownfield sites that we as planners should be investigating and looking at further. I really welcome that kind of local involvement, for people to come forward and say, have you looked at this area? It might have potential for housing. We want people to get involved." The new consultation will be launched on Monday, February the 15th, and will run till April the 4th. Virtual sessions with the public will be held in February and March. City councillors on the forum raised several issues. Councillor Mike Crask, Liberal Democrat, asked whether now was the time to increase housing in the High Street. His comment only days after Debenhams confirmed the closure of its High Street store. Councillor Fiona Mather, Conservative, spoke about open spaces and their accessibility to the public. She said, Winchester appears to be surrounded by a substantial green belt, but much of it is not accessible. In St Michael's ward, most of it is Winchester College playing fields or farming land owned by St Cross. We do have a shortage. The more we infill in Winchester, the more we create a problem. We have many more people with fewer and fewer places they can go for recreation. Councillor Paula Ferguson, Lib Dem and portfolio holder for local economy, said the council needed to protect employment sites at Winall and Bar End, otherwise Winchester would turn into a dormitory town. She said, we could end up with lots of houses and nowhere for people to work. Councillor Dominic Hiscock said of the 15-minute neighbourhood idea, I would like to see a cafe within 15 minutes of where people live, with a table outside where people can feel part of a community.
And here's something that always amazes me. Medieval discoveries. Significant medieval discoveries have been made as part of Winchester College's Sports Centre redevelopment. The site at Kingsgate Park has been subject to archaeological monitoring and as a result of planning conditions, with the first finds made in May 2020, followed by further investigations since. Pottery and a knife from the medieval period were unearthed first, followed by part of a historic lane with a stone-lined well, also from the same period. The lane that has been discovered has been identified as Ginge Lane, and I apologise if the pronunciation's not quite right on that, which was last mapped in the 1370s. A team of archaeologists plotted the exact route of the lane and recovered and recorded all findings of significance. The lane runs directly across the path of the new Winchester College Sports Centre up to St Cross Road, with the main reception entrance and corridor sitting over the line of the lane. Two past residents appear in historic records as living on Ginge Lane in 1320. Ralph, the clerk to the cathedral, and William of Exeter. The well is of the same age and sits to the side of the lane, which is unusual, and perhaps indicates that it was a commercial well. A total of 5,000 items dating back to 1320 were removed from the site to be researched further. Despite delays to the project caused by the archaeological findings and COVID, the school has said that the new state-of-the-art facilities are still on track to be completed in 2022, allowing pupils to enjoy and participate in a variety of sports. The development will also provide much improved facilities for the local community. Now, the article is accompanied by a series of photographs. There's a relatively young archaeologist right up to her neck in the diggings there. And she looks like she's just uncovered some kind of stone, or sorry, some bone fragments. And then you've got another picture here showing some pottery dating back to that period, which was found at Kingsgate Park. So all very, very exciting.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Bartlett, Paul Bartlett, who died on the 13th of January, aged 60. Bringlow, Anne Bringlow, died peacefully on the 20th of January after a short illness, aged 86. Byrne, Michael Byrne, known as Tiny, died on the 24th of January, aged 84. Cowling, Patricia Cowling, died on the 21st of January. Griffin, Dorothy Irene Griffin, died peacefully on the 6th of January. Hume, Brenda Hume, née Nettleton, who died peacefully on the 18th of January, aged 77. Mitchell, Audrey Maureen Mitchell, died peacefully on the 29th of January, aged 90. Rabbits, Derek Rabbits, died on the 24th of January, aged 87. Roskell, Hazel Roskell, died on the 23rd of January at Dunwood Manor Care Home, aged 82. Singleton, Paul Singleton, died at home in Botley, aged 62. And Unsworth, Barbara Tudor Unsworth, née Banger, died on the 20th of January in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 99. And now we have Christian comment, please, Andrew.
And this week's Christian comment is titled, Be Still, Lockdown Saving Stress and Time. For some, lockdown has provided a welcome relief from the pre-COVID perpetual busyness. Although we miss the physical connections with our loved ones, many have found definite benefits from drawing back. Not commuting has saved time and stress. And we're able to enjoy our natural surroundings, although admittedly the warmer months were more appealing. Appreciating the extra peace and quiet, we're even contemplating how to achieve a better balance when things finally return to normal. For others, the pandemic has made life more intense than ever. We're working hard on the front line, feeling stretched like never before, and dangerously close to burnout. Or we're constantly juggling homeworking, teaching the kids, keeping the family going, and trying to look out for the vulnerable around us. Finding just 10 minutes peace and quiet to ourselves is a rare treat and a massive challenge. The physical and mental health benefits of silence are well proven, and even just a few minutes in each day are worth fighting for. But the real challenge is how to find internal peace and stillness. Shutting out the constant noise of our culture takes real determination and practice. We live in a world where it's possible to be connected to a 24/7 stream of global information, news, multi-platformed entertainment, and social media feeds. Many of us carry this on our smartphones, so it's available literally everywhere we go. Back in the day, we might have found ourselves in a quiet moment, staring out of a window or waiting in a queue, allowing our minds to drift or even, perish the thought, getting bored. Now we've grown used to checking our phones at every opportunity, ensuring we don't miss the latest email, message, news story, meme, or social media post. And all the while, we are shaped by the things we allow to feed and influence us. As Ronald Rollheiser says, pathological busyness, distraction, and restlessness are major blocks today within our spiritual lives. Don't we just know it? The encouragement to be still and know that I am God, Psalm 46, verse 10, has never been more necessary. It suggests that God is not hiding or distant, but ready and waiting to meet with us. However, we must deliberately turn off the distractions and make the space to be with and hear him. It's the same in any relationship. Intimacy grows through exclusive attention. Ask my wife. Christians have practiced regular silence and solitude for centuries, not just for mental well-being, but as an intentional way to connect with God for spiritual refreshment and renewal. Whether it involves prayer, reading the Bible, or simply sitting in silence, scheduling regular time to simply be with God is a must for anyone who wants to grow in their faith. For me, that begins with switching off my phone, so my mind could start to rest from the chaos. It's only then that I find I can hear the voice of God with any real clarity. And that was written by Nigel Hemming, who is the senior pastor at the Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. The first one is headed Behaviour Praised. And it's from Graham Tillotson. So my wife and I moved to Winchester just over 2 weeks ago, and we both quickly observed how well behaved are the city's residents at social distancing, compared with those in Surrey whence we came. Here, people more readily move into single file, move out of the way, or simply wait while we pass, just as we've always done. In Winchester, the majority, including teenagers, regard this as the norm, whereas previously we were in a minority, many of the nonconformists viewing us somewhat disparagingly or even odd. Well done to Winchester's residents, and let's hope that this behaviour is maintained until the pandemic is behind us. And that's from Graham Tillotson, Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
And this letter is about the sunflower lanyards. Sir, like many, I am exempt from wearing a mask, but I do in the doctor's surgery and the hospital. I won't go into why I'm exempt. But I have noticed that those who wear the sunflower lanyard, provided by many shops, some like me, get bullied. Take one day last week. One lady called me a COVID spreader. Another lady, as me and my partner got off the bus, remarked to the driver that we were not wearing masks. And one elderly gentleman sadly said, "You are only wearing it as a gimmick." I politely walked away from them all. I ask that if people see someone wearing the hidden disability sunflower mask and lanyard, be polite. Keep in mind that there are exemptions, and these could be for many reasons. Do not single out the people, and everyone stay safe. I've had my say, and would be interested in other people's views. And that's from Mark Rowe, who is a sunflower exempt wearer, Taplin's Close, Week.
And this next letter is from Eileen Berry, headed COVID Volunteers. Sir, I think we ought to acknowledge that all the volunteers that are helping in all parts of the city to give the corona vaccinations. My experience has been incredible, inasmuch as everyone is kind, considerate and assuring. There is one group of people I'd particularly like to acknowledge, and that's the Winchester Rotary Club. They have put themselves out willingly and joyfully in the Discovery Centre to help. I don't know whether it's commonly known that Winchester Rotary has dedicated itself to many international crises, i.e. Wells for India, trying to eradicate polio throughout the world, young carers, and many, many more. They step in and they administer the financial side of things by raising as much money as they can for these projects. Having raised the money, they transfer the funds to whatever country that is in need of that funding. It goes to another department in that country because Rotary has offices all over the world. So often, there is not the middleman. I think it is worth saying that all these volunteers, whoever they are, colour or creed, makes no difference. They give of themselves, and we ought to be incredibly grateful. And as far as Winchester Rotary is concerned, the work goes on even in lockdown. We will come through this terrible time, and vaccination is the way forward. So we should say hurrah to all those volunteers, and may it continue. Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock.
And this letter is from Dick Selwood, and it's titled Party Lines. Sir, whenever a headline starts, council criticised for ... the report is inevitably based on a statement by Conservative leader on the City Council, Caroline Horrell, or Councillor Caroline Horrell. I suppose that it would attract less attention and fewer clicks online if the headline said, Conservatives attack Lib Dems over local plan, or whatever. For a non-party member, it is depressing that all of our city's affairs are discussed on purely party lines, not on their merits. And he has a point. Dick Selwood, Northview, Orams Arbour, Winchester.
This short letter from Jill Collymore, Cannon Street, Winchester. Debenham's idea. Sir, you ask for suggestions for a replacement building for Debenham's in the High Street, Winchester. That's Chronicle comment, January the 28th. A building which is urgently needed in the city is a small concert hall. That central position would be an ideal place for it, and its presence with attendant facilities could enliven that part of the High Street, particularly in the evenings. And that's from Jill Collymore, Cannon Street, Winchester.
And this letter is from Councillor Jackie Porter. Consultation. Sir, the Chronicle has published a lot of news items about potential development sites in recently, which has raised the interest in planning matters ever higher. Thank you. A much wider group of residents want to get involved in the planning process now. The local plan process is filled with regulation, consultation, and examination. In comments to your paper, I have said consistently that strategic planning, especially for greenfield sites, has several steps of public consultation at every stage, and the developer promotion of a site does not imply permission has been given or will be given. It is the local plan which determines what remains as countryside and where the principle of homes and employment would be allowed. I'm writing to give readers advance notice of the next stage of consultation of the local plan, which was approved at January's Cabinet meeting. Winchester City Council is inviting public feedback from all ages and backgrounds on the potential strategic issues and priorities for the new local plan 2038. To do this, the website Your Place, Your Plan will go live from February the 15th. Winchester Lib Dems are fully committed to ensuring that everyone has the chance to take part in shaping the local plan. We are dedicated to making this the very best environment for everyone with an interest in Winchester District. The way we live our lives, travel, work, and enjoy our spare time are all influenced by both the natural and built environments, and the local plan shapes this for the future. The COVID-19 pandemic has given us all a chance to think what our priorities are, and this is a unique opportunity to tell us what matters to you. You can sign up for updates on this and other City Council matters by going to winchester.gov.uk and search e-bulletin sign up. Residents without internet access can request paper copies on 01962 848 508. I'm looking forward to receiving thousands of responses. And that's from Councillor Jackie Porter, the Cabinet Member for Built Environment and Wellbeing, in the Council Offices, Colebrook Street, Winchester.
And this letter is headed Royal Down, more like Spoilt Down. Sir, Royaldown is not a garden village, but a greenwashed mega-development. Locally we call it Spoilt Down. It's a 5,000 houses, Barton Farm is only 2,000, which would destroy beautiful historic chalk downland, overwhelm surrounding communities and substantially affect the health of the people who live in those communities. The Sunday Times put Winchester on the naughty step for the planning and management of Silver Hill. Station approach has not been covered in glory either. Winchester deserves world-leading planning. To do that, we must start with an inspiring vision, not with the shella we, the ordinary citizens who live here, must insist our public servants, both councillors and officers, stop squabbling and lead. Winchester could easily be the best place to live in Winchester, in Britain. It won't be while councillors expend their energy on saying it's the other side's fault, and officers spend theirs writing 104-page briefing documents which discombobulate the councillors and do nothing to make a complex and technical set of issues more widely understood. On February the 15th, Winchester City Council consultation begins. I implore readers to get involved. Locals are also organising opposition under the Save South Winchester banner and have a Facebook group that is easy to join. Evil, or just bad, only needs good people to do nothing. And that letter's from Louise Hedges, Main Road, Hursley.
Right, and that was certainly the Royaldown scheme is not only contentious, it's probably going to get even more contentious as we move forward. Moving on. Waste worries, and this is a letter from Peter Rees, who's a member of the Winchester constituency Labour Party. Sir, Councillor Todd may be satisfied by the response, but clearly the public are not, and that's the Chronicle, January 21st. Information about the scheme that residents are being railroaded into paying for is still largely missing. It isn't what's happening now, it's the shady background reasons and transparently clear figures that are missing, clearly being deliberately withheld. Exactly what was the problem with the highly successful Greenback scheme? Why did it need replacing? Why are the financial implications of new for old being completely obscured? Strong commercial pressure has clearly been exerted by BIFA as part of the new contract to adopt and charge for the bin scheme they want, supposedly a best value 8-year deal with Winchester, including fortnightly green waste collection. However, their commercial record is poor. They were rejected by North Somerset Council for poor performance. They regularly have customer service complaints from small businesses, including an excessively long cancellation period, and their poor service is well documented. Without any evidence of public necessity whatsoever, the underhand introduction of this service will seriously disadvantage people who have no car, older people, and those who use the free green bag scheme. Everyone will now have to pay extra to have green waste collected. Why? We know nothing about how many green bags there are in stock, or what will happen to them. We have not been told why thousands of WCC dustbins, paid for and stored in the Chesil Tunnel, are not being used by us, the council taxpayers. Why are there unused as unwanted bins are being purchased? As usual, the LibCon Dems have not conducted a consultation with the public about this, despite a commitment to increase recycling. Behind the shady deal gimmickry and the secrecy this scheme represents, there must be some real facts. And that's from Peter Rees, who's the member of the Winchester constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we have the Chronicle editorial comment. Let's all do our bit to stop the spread. While the majority of us to remain at home in a bid to prevent the spread of coronavirus, some seemingly do not realise that it will take all of us working together to stop this awful virus. This week, we're reporting on a mother who's been fined after her 14-year-old son was found to be breaking lockdown restrictions two nights in a row. Fingers crossed this fine will have an impact and hopefully prevent her son from being stopped by the police for a third time. Whilst almost 10 million people have been given their, at least their first vaccination, we must remember that this won't completely stop the spread, and we all need to do our bit. We have to help the NHS and those who are working hard to treat, look after those who are most at risk, and not, like another police report said this week, travelling as a group to get fast food in a city where you do not live. Fingers crossed the police can find these rule breakers, and hopefully action taken against them may make them think twice in the future about not sticking to the COVID regulations which have been put in place to save lives. And now we have first person, Andrew.
To pause or not to pause jabs. And this is written by Khalid Aziz. What a world, eh? There we were, locked down, sitting quietly, accepting our place in the COVID queue, so finally ticking off the days to mid-February by when the highest at-risk groups would have been all offered jabs. Then up pops somebody from the World Health Organization suggesting that the UK should pause its world-leading vaccination program so our jollop can be diverted to less advantaged countries. This immediately after the unseeming spat with the EU, which exposed Brussels bureaucrats to Buffett's law. That's the one that says, when the tide goes out, you see who's not wearing swimming trunks. Having decided, with zero experience of medical issues, to arrogate to ourselves the procurement of vaccines, the bureaucrats found themselves sadly wanting compared to the newly Brexited UK government, which turned out to be surprisingly fleet of foot. Who knew? Early inquiries of friends about WHO plea for us to stall our vaccination program met with dark mutterings and oaths, mainly featuring sex and travel. But should we pause? As I write, we've heard nothing from the beleaguered Archbishop of Canterbury, already reeling from his rapid embracing of a closed church policy, effectively cutting himself off from his dwindling constituency. But this sounds like something he might opinion on. It's a tricky one. The same argument is found around food banks. How can I justify ordering lobster when just a few miles away some are struggling to afford a tin of baked beans? Compassion is always patchy. At Christmas I give to the St. Martin's in the Fields Crisis Charity, and I'm touched by the Cabs for Jabs scheme, its genesis in Winchester, which pays for taxis to take the needy to their vaccination appointments. We can understand the logic that says no one is safe until we're all safe. But this surely is one occasion where politicians the world over are on the money when it comes to reading the mood of the electorate. People, possibly in letters to the Chronicle next week, will aver that they are fully signed up members of the human race. But who will refuse the call to jab when it comes? Lord, make me chaste. But not yet. St. Augustine's dictum was about sex, but it has equal force when it comes to food, and now vaccination. Vaccine nationalism is an inevitability. They say, even in democracies, we are just three square meals away from revolution. Lack of food will bring people out on the street. It's how we are. Slaves to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The World Health Organization should save their breath and the risk of RSI from all that finger-wagging. Notably, I heard no censure of Israel, whose Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, threw the money at the pharma companies to secure its world-leading vaccination program. paying an inflationary $20 a shot. It's not clear how many Palestinians will benefit from Bibi's farsightedness, which of course had nothing to do with upcoming elections. No commendation either of Francis Emmanuel Macron for his rubbishing of the Oxford vaccine, as he desperately tried to get the EU to back the less than glittering Sanofi, French naturally, effect, or effort even. Hold fast, Boris. You have a plan. Stick to it. Finally, spare a thought for chalkstream trout, featured recently in this column. A group of vegans surreptitiously filmed one of their Hampshire suppliers alleging fish cruelty. Unacceptable, said Chalkstream in an email to customers, committing to discontinue the supplier until assurances have been given on fish welfare. In a triumph of PR copy, they added, "We were gutted when we saw the footage. You couldn't make it up."
Sounds like that ought to have been in Belgarum. Talking of which, we have a couple of items from Belgarum, the alternative look at the news. Firstly, Victorian house doomed. Last week, the Chronicle reported how Chesil Theatre and St John's Winchester Charity have reached an agreement after many years for land on Chesil Street. The purchase will enable the theatre to finally extend its premises, which are currently bursting at the seams in the medieval church. That report said that the three Victorian terraced houses were to be retained and refurbished, an addition to the number of modest-sized properties in the city centre. The last use was believed to have been for staff at the nearby Chesil Rectory restaurant around 15 years ago. However, the larger, late Victorian or Edwardian, semi-detached property next door will be demolished to allow the theatre to expand. It's an unusual building, with its archway through to the back behind the blue double doors. And there's a photograph of it here with the... it looks like a commercial, an old commercial property. Big blue double doors allowing access to the rear of the property. Presumably it was built for a successful tradesman, such as a builder or mason, to have storage or a workshop at the back with access to for a horse and cart, back in the day when people lived above the shop. If restored, with its riverbank location, it would have been valued at a guess around £750,000. Belgarum would like to know more about it. So if you have any information, email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And the second item from Belgarum, a brash ballet says hello to homeowner. And there's a picture of two swans. They look as though they're sort of tapping on the front door of a house in Abbots Barton. And these swans were spotted in Abbots Barton by the front door of someone's property. Belgarum admires their courage, and after all, they're probably getting less bread than ever due to the national lockdown. Fewer people are visiting the parks than in March because of the cold, harsh weather. Nick Tout, who took the photo, said, "On the 25th day of lockdown, as bored as can be, two swans came a-knocking at the back by a discarded Christmas tree. They amused me, either bored with lockdown and trying to have a house party, or fighting their own reflection. Let us hope they're in the same household, or the same body of water at least, as they do not appear to be social distancing." And now we have Lighting Up Time, which ends on Friday the 5th of February at 7:37 a.m. and begins at 5:03 p.m. And next Wednesday, the 10th of February, it ends at 7:28 a.m. and begins at 5:12 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz LeGrice on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And now we continue with items of general news. Andrew.
And this one is titled Village Pub Cooking for Local Children and is accompanied by a photograph of the Bugle Inn on the High Street in Twyford. A village pub is offering free, nutritious school meals to local children in an operation dubbed the Twyford St. Mary's School Dinner Scheme. Any child who attends Twyford St. Mary's and is entitled to free school meals will be provided with a free hot meal for collection. Meals can be collected on Wednesdays to Fridays between 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. at the Bugle Inn. Twyford itself is a very community-minded place, as could be seen when the pub itself was rescued from demolition back in 2005. Landlord Lenny Carr Roberts is renowned from TV's Saturday Kitchen and also owns The Fox at Crawley. This is not the first time the hostelry has stepped in to help the local community. Lenny said, "During lockdown one, we were doing nearly 200 free meals for our NHS heroes around the Winchester area. This lockdown, I felt that we should continue to do the NHS meals from The Fox, but as we have a primary school in Twyford, we should provide a free, hot, nutritious and home-cooked meal for those children that are entitled to free meals. Other pupils are also set to benefit, being able to pay just £2.50 for a lunch when not at school. School dinners were so important to me as a child," says Lenny, "so it was an easy decision for us as a pub to offer this. Menu details will be announced each Friday for the following week."
Lucky escape for driver. The driver of a sports car that hit floodwater crashed into a tree before flipping on its roof. Emergency services were called to a part of the A30 near Winchester on January the 29th following an accident in which the convertible softtop was wrecked. Stockbridge Road was closed in both directions following the accident while emergency services dealt with the scene. Hampshire Police said that the driver had a lucky escape following the incident. In a post on Twitter, the unit said, "Rural flooding is a fact of life during the winter. It's the driver who's responsible for being able to stop in the distance they can see to be clear. This driver on the A30 clearly didn't hear the signage and had a lucky escape after taking avoiding action." And there's a picture of the car. On its roof, there's a huge puddle in the background, which is obviously the part that he came through before the car flipped over and is on its roof. But it is at least relatively intact. Very lucky man.
St. George will be our man in Havana. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Sir George Hollingbury with Theresa May when he was her PPS. And inset into the picture is a flag of Cuba. Former Meon Valley MP, Sir George Hollingbury, has been appointed British Ambassador to Cuba. He was MP for Meon Valley between 2010 and 2019 and served as Trade Minister and PPS to Prime Minister Theresa May. Sir George, who lives in Old Alsford, was previously a city councillor and a deputy leader of the council and chairman of Alsford Town Council. His appointment comes as a surprise, as he has no diplomatic experience and has been criticised by trade unions. The Guardian reported, "David Penman of the FDA union, representing Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office, the FCDO staff, claiming the appointment was an example of cronyism. Sir George said, "I feel so lucky to be given an opportunity like this. It's really exciting and both Jeanette and I are looking forward to it enormously. Of course, my appointment has created comment in some quarters, but I approach this wholly recognising the challenges that await. My years in Number 10 were essentially all about diplomacy, albeit in a domestic context, and my role as a minister at the Department of International Trade took me all over the world, negotiating with and creating relationships with foreign governments. I shouldn't forget the scars I bear from the rough and tumble of Alsford Town Council either."
More than 100 objections to a proposal for a solar farm near the town. A flood of opposition has greeted a proposal for a solar farm north of Alsford. By the start of this week, 119 objections had been received in a little over a week for plans for a solar farm on 54 acres at Godsfield near Old Alresford, generating enough power for 3,000 homes. More than 20 objections had greeted a request last year for whether an environmental impact assessment was needed for the scheme. The City Council said one was not needed. Anesco Limited has now put in a full planning application to include transformers, a substation, security fence and gate, incorporating infrared beam system. It has sparked a barrage of objections, with many citing the location next to a long-distance footpath. Khalid Aziz, the Chronicle columnist from St Marybourne, wrote, "I strongly object to this proposal, as it is clearly in totally the wrong place. The Three Castles Path is a vital part of Winchester and Hampshire heritage, and as such should not be blighted by a sea of solar panels. In short, this is totally the wrong place for such a project." John Layley of Lower Weald also objected. He said, "We know from experience these are huge, unsightly constructions surrounded by ugly fencing, numerous threatening signs, a constant buzz and video cameras, and this will be seen from miles away." Richard Corbett of Holden Farm Cheriton wrote, "The proposed site is a particularly attractive part of Hampshire. Surely all new warehouses on brownfield sites are better places for solar panels than pristine countryside, which is also used for food production. This proposed development will damage local biodiversity, wreak havoc with the local environment, and trash our local unspoiled countryside. The proposal is likely to go to planning committee because of the number of objections." The Three Castles Path was established 30 years ago to run 60 miles, linking the castles at Windsor, Odiham and Winchester. It traces the journeys made by King John in the early 13th century. The Open Spaces Society opposes the plan, and local correspondent David Ram produced an image which is attached to this report, and they've outlined the huge area with housing in the background, I have to say, which is due to be covered by this solar farm.
Now, here's quite a positive article, and it's something we referred to a little bit earlier. Thousands raised to help people get through the COVID vaccines. And it's got a couple of photographs here, and it's about the Cabs for Jabs project. Winchester taxi drivers are doing exactly what they set out to do, and more. As previously reported, the fundraising initiative, Cabs for Jabs, is taking elderly residents to and from their vaccination appointments for free. In less than 2 weeks, the scheme has seen more than £8,000 raised and provided around 65 trips. But the volunteers have not stopped there. Leader Tim Perry said, "We're also helping other towns and cities start their own Jabs for Cabs fundraising efforts. So far, we've helped Tunbridge, Brighton and Southampton get started and are getting inquiries from many other towns. Across all the fundraising efforts, we've raised over £15,000. We've been taking people all over Winchester Borough to their jabs, as far afield as Stockbridge, Medstead and Wickham, as well, of course, in the city. It's really clear that many people, especially in rural areas, would not have made their appointments without our help. We had one gentleman from Lockerley, which is the other side of Mottisfont, who needed to get to the Holiday Inn. There's just no way he could have done that journey on public transport. We urge all Winchester District residents to visit GoFundMe, the search on Winchester Cabs for Jabs, and please donate. The Winchester scheme needs to reach £20,000 to provide a total of 1,000 free rides to and from vaccine hubs, ensuring all vulnerable people in the community can attend their appointments. And to book a taxi, call 01962 884 343.
Hospital put on black alert. Winchester Hospital was put on black alert last month following a surge in COVID-19 patients. Hospitals usually declare this highest alert level when they're under such significant pressure that they cannot deliver comprehensive care and patient care is at risk. However, a spokesperson for Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust said the alert system is internal and refers only to COVID patients, not the wider care of other hospital patients. Alex Whitfield, the chief executive, reported to the board of directors on January the 28th that the hospital had been moved to black alert status following a rise in COVID-19 patients. The trust was asked earlier in January if it was on black alert, and a spokesperson responded to say it has its own internal COVID status system to manage our patients and staffing levels depending on the severity and pressure on our service. Julie Mascary, Chief Operating Officer, said, "During the pandemic, we've implemented an internal COVID status system to monitor the level of COVID activity in our hospitals and appropriately action our plans as needed. On the 1st of January 2021, we moved our hospitals in Basingstoke and Winchester to black status to reflect the rising numbers of patients with COVID-19. This is an internal system only and helps our teams to be able to respond in the best way depending on the severity and pressure on our services. This does not reflect our ability to provide the best possible care to all of our patients, and our teams continue to work tirelessly to care for everyone who needs us."
The bin men give a star-struck toddler a high-vis jacket of his own. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a young guy wearing very proudly his high-vis jacket, looking out onto the street, and accompanied by a dog that actually is as big as he is. Most little boys receive their best Christmas presents from Santa, but that wasn't the case with 20-month-old William Jenks. Instead of wearing a red suit and driving a sleigh, his heroes wore orange ones and drove a bin lorry, and they also left him the wonderful surprise gift. For outside the door of his Winchester home, he discovered that his local team of refuse collectors had left him a personalised high-vis vest blazoned with the words, "Bill the Bin Man." His mother, Caroline Woolley, 46, a forensic accountant, said, "We were all overcome by their kindness. They know that for Bill, the highlight of his week is when they come to collect the bins. They are his absolute heroes. He and our Doberman dog, Jess, wait at the gate to wave at them, and he even made them all Christmas cards. It was the best present ever when he found that they had made something for him, and he wears it with pride every week." Caroline was so impressed that she reported the good deed of bin men Dom, Grant and Adam to her local Winchester City Council, as well as her local MP. She added, "Our key workers have done so much for us this year, and for them to perform such an act of kindness for a little boy is wonderful."
And another good news story, excuse me. Good news, Joy. Joy for Farms Shop after difficult year. It's been a difficult year for local businesses, but Cobb's Farm Shop in Winchester has shown that every cloud has a silver lining. The business in Springvale Road has been shortlisted for the South East 2021 Farm Shop and Deli Awards. Manager Annette Sibley said, "The team and I are delighted to have been shortlisted. After such a difficult year in which we've seen so many changes, it would be great to go further in the awards. It's been a real pleasure for myself and the team to be able to provide our customers with the best of local and beyond during these difficult times, and we're very proud of the essential service we've been able to offer. To hear that our lovely customers have nominated us validates all our hard work and makes us feel very much part of the local community. We look forward to the awards ceremony in July, and the announcement will take place at 3 p.m. on July the 5th. And there's a lovely photograph of all the smiling staff outside the front of Cobb's Farm Shop, And I have to say, having used the shop a few times, I never realised they had so many staff working there.
The council are prioritising recovery. Since the start of the pandemic last year, Winchester City Council has prioritised the economic recovery of the district. As lockdowns and national restrictions impacted, the council diverted resources to ensure that businesses could access vital funds as quickly as possible. To date, £34.6 million in business grants and £27.8 million in business rates relief has been distributed to local businesses. Specific sectors needed help in understanding what each set of new guidance meant for them, and the council created information packs and bulletins which clarified legislation, signposted the latest information, and even provided handy resources to print off and display. The net results have been to strengthen the channels of communication between district businesses and their council. Subscriptions to the council's free bulletins have increased by over 40% since the virus struck the district's economy. This support continues to evolve, and the council is currently developing a hardship fund and other funded initiatives to support businesses' recovery. A further round of funding has recently been launched to support businesses and organisations within key sectors that have either been mandated to close or whose income has been impacted in excess of 30%. These organisations will be eligible for a grant between £1,333 and £3,000. For some time, the discussions at Cabinet and with partnership organisations have been centred around supporting the district and its economy to build back better. By tapping into the Reopening High Street Safety Fund, the RHSS, the council has been able to launch a dedicated specialist business support service for high street businesses across the district centres that have been significantly impacted by COVID-19. Recognising that independent retailers have been particularly hard hit, plans are starting to take shape with a view to developing an additional powerful e-commerce platform, a new virtual high street. Consumers will be able to purchase items remotely from a range of independent retailers from across the district and take delivery of these via a single coordinated service. The plan is that the council will fund the development, launch, marketing, and the first 6 months of operating costs for independent high street businesses to benefit from this additional powerful route to market. COVID-19 has also seen the council transform its communications to residents in the district. The Your Council newsletter is emailed fortnightly to over 15,000 local people, and the biannual About Winchester newsletter has also moved online. Readers of both these virtual publications and the 20,000 City Council social media followers are encouraged to support local to help the local economy recover. The Visit Winchester channels have also leapt into action, supporting tourism businesses who had devised virtual experiences and reminding local people that when the time came, the district's visitors offer was ready to welcome them back with open arms. Councillor Paula Ferguson, Cabinet Member for Local Economy, said, "The council is well placed to support businesses. We're often the first to hear about national developments and have long-standing relationships with both individual businesses and organisations like Winchester BID, Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, and other local networks. We've had so much positive feedback from the thousands of businesses who we've been in contact with, whether they are receiving one-to-one support or because they're receiving the latest business bulletin, which gives them all the information they need in one place. Communicating with our residents and locals about where they can still shop and what is open via our local support local shop online campaign has been key to supporting businesses, especially during the lockdown or the varying levels of restrictions. It's also clear that local businesses have shown great innovation as they've adapted their virtual offering from online sourdough making classes to craft classes, which has meant they've been able to highlight some really exciting things that people can still do. All this serves to build the district's brand across multiple markets, and it contributes to rebuilding a vibrant economy when the situation allows.
Town Forum grants for pair of schemes. Councillors in the City of Winchester are poised to fund street calming, but may review funding for a new scout hut. Highcliffe Community Forum for Action wants funding for measures on Milland Road and requested £36,000 to create a living street environment and boost walking and cycling. Councillors on the Town Forum instead agreed a grant of £10,000 for a feasibility study with the potential of a further £26,412. The scheme would be managed by cycling charity Sustrans and need the support of the County Council, the Highways Authority, as well as local residents. Meanwhile, £50,000 had been approved in principle towards a new scout facility at Abbott's Barton and Hyde Scout Group. A report to the forum said the total project was estimated at around £600,000. But it is believed this target is still to be met, so a review will take place to understand if this project remains viable. The Town Forum is a committee of the City Council and comprises only those 13 members who represent the five city wards. 11 are Liberal Democrats and 2 are Conservatives.
And now something for the football fans out there. Spitfires climb 8 places with 4 points. Eastleigh have climbed 8 places in the National League table on the strength of a last-gasp 2-1 win at Boreham Wood and a 1-1 draw with Wrexham in midweek. The results have left the Spitfires 3 points adrift of the playoff places ahead of the visit of Solihull Moors to the Silver Lake Stadium on Saturday. Eastleigh came from behind at Boreham Wood to snatch a stoppage time winner through substitute Dan Smith, while a second-half James Tomlinson penalty ensured a share of the spoils against Wrexham. Manager Ben Stevens reflected, "We're in a good place. 7 points from the last 3 games and just 2 defeats in 8 during a crowded programme speaks for itself. What pleases me is that on Tuesday night, against a strong Wrexham side, we fielded 6 or 7 players under 22 years of age, which is very encouraging. One of those players, close-season signing Dan Smith, came off the substitutes bench and grabbed the winner at Boreham Wood, where Eastleigh trailed 1-0 to a Kane Smith goal for 50 minutes. Goalkeeper Joe McDonnell produced some inspired saves before Eastleigh, gradually growing into the game, equalised with a pinpoint cross by Danny Hollands, and that was met by Tyrone Barnett, who sent a towering header past one-time Gosport Borough gloveman Nathan Ashmore to make it 1-1. Stevens sent on Smith for Barnett with 2 minutes into stoppage time, and former Bognor Regis Time Town hitman finished off a classic Spitfires counter-attack with the winner. Ben House weaved his way upfield in a superb 50-yard run before unselfishly playing the ball into Smith's feet. The midweek draw with high-budget Wrexham was an eminently watchable affair, with Eastleigh left to rue several good chances. One in particular, a header from Ben House, which sailed off target before Quayne Thomas picked up a long clearance and sidestepped Andrew Boyce to score in half-time stoppage time. Wrexham had been second best in the opening 45 minutes, and looked a rejuvenated side after the break, with Jordan Davis twice going close. Eastleigh weathered the storm, and shortly after, Sam Smart had tested goalkeeper Christian Dibble with a cross shot, were awarded a penalty for a high foot challenge on House. Joe Tomlinson sent Dibble the wrong way from the penalty to level the scores.
Worries about safety at Bridge. Concerns have been raised about safety at a bridge near Winchester where a school bus crashed last September. Several children were hurt when a bus struck the railway bridge on Wellhouse Lane, but now councillors have said they're worried about other road users. The area is now increasingly used by the public as the nearby Barton Farm King's Barton Estate grows. A set of traffic lights should have been installed there on the completion of the 200th house, and now the estate has nearly 300 being lived in of the proposed 2,000 homes. Councillor Jackie Porter told the King's Barton Forum, "It really does seem to need traffic light system putting in. There are now nearly 300 houses. It feels like Groundhog Day. We've been discussing this for a year. We're seeing more and more people running, walking, cycling through that route. The forum would appreciate to know when this work is going to be done and when operational." The forum heard there were still discussions with Network Rail, who owned the bridge, before the lights could be installed. Another issue raised by local resident Vicky Bolton was a pedestrian stroke cycle crossing on Worthy Lane. It would be a missing link on a route that runs from North Winchester across King's Barton to the city centre. Currently, County Council Deputy Leader Rob Humby has said no to the crossing, arguing there are not enough people to justify it. Miss Bolton said a crossing would create a safe route from Harestock into the city centre, and responding to the alleged lack of users, she said, "Build it and they will come. If you do not have safe infrastructure, people will not use it." Councillor Dominic Hiscock agreed. He said, "It's a shame and negates the new path across Barton Farm to come to a point where it falls off a cliff. We need to be thinking about the whole business of cycling across that area. To allow a barrier to remain there is unhelpful." The forum heard that city councillors were pleased at much of the progress being made on the estate. Councillor Jane Rutter said, "It's great to see a quality cycle route from King's Barton to Worthy Road. The cycle path is the only non-muddy bit." Chris Hughes, the City Council King's Barton Implementation Officer, responded to criticism about the end of the route in Abbots Barton. "It just stops before a domestic driveway." He said, "I appreciate the guidance from Sustrans is for a continuous route. As a cyclist, I understand the frustrations that barriers cause, but it is a safety issue. I would not be happy for kids to run or cycle across this driveway. It's a risk that doesn't appear to be worth taking." Locking bollards will soon be installed on the cycle path to stop it being used by delivery drivers seeking a shortcut into King's Barton. Meanwhile, Ian Curry for Scala Homes said the play area that was closed last year was due to be reopened soon. "It's too wet at the moment," he told the forum. "It would be crazy to open it and then have to close it again to re-turf. We need to make sure the turf can take children running on it." Councillor Rutter called for the footpath to the Barton Farm School to have a hard surface soon. She said, "It's essential that some surface is put to the school before the school reopens. We should get a commitment from Carla and the County Council to ensure the path will have a permeable surface to allow parents a non-muddy access to school. At the moment, it's disgraceful." Mr. Curry said the footpath was a County Council responsibility, not Carla's.
And here we've got the pavilion. It's a proposed new pavilion at the North Walls Recreation Ground. And there's a fantastic photograph or computer-generated image of the pavilion by the Winchester-based AR Design Consultancy, showing a really snazzy pavilion clad in timber. The pavilion plans are back on target after review. Plans for a new sports pavilion, part paid for by community fundraising, appears to be back on track. Residents in Hyde in Winchester had been furious when the City Council said it was reviewing the Hyde Pavilion scheme because costs were climbing. Fundraisers had raised more than £200,000 towards the £800,000 of replacement building at the North Walls Recreation Ground. But all tenders received were at least £150,000 over budget. The Town Forum agreed to support proposals to amend the design and specification for the pavilion and keep it within budget. It reaffirmed its commitment to the scheme and said that the £595,000 funding approved in January 2020 is still available. Richard Botham, the strategic director, said the tenders from contractors had been higher than expected, and we've gone back to them and asked them to review them and provide fresh prices. He said the new deadline is February the 15th. Then we will determine how to review the options, and if they are within budget, we can move forward. Mike Caldwell, a trustee of the Pavilion Project, told the forum, "We welcome the report and are pleased there will be a thorough evaluation process. We welcome the formation of a project board to manage the process going forward." Mr. Caldwell disputed the calculations that had put the scheme over budget and told councillors the pavilion would generate income for the council as it would be bookable throughout the year. Another new pavilion is also planned at King George V playing field at Highcliffe at a cost of £1.2 million. It will be the base for the girls' and women's football. Alan Higgs, chairman of Winchester City Flyers, welcomed news of the progress on the new pavilion at King George V playing field. "I have had a look at the plans, and they are rather good."
Mass testing set to be rolled out. A mass testing programme could be rolled out across Hampshire this month, it's been revealed. Transport workers, childminders, retail staff, construction and maintenance workers, as well as volunteers, including those supporting local councils and emergency services, could have access to rapid lateral flow tests from later this month. The move will aim to identify asymptomatic residents in a bid to stop the spread of coronavirus. The news comes as Hampshire County Council has confirmed that it's finalising a bid to central government for support in the setup of community testing sites across the county. "Final locations are yet to be determined," the council said, but it hopes to hear back from the government by mid-February. If approved, the authority said it would hope to begin a phased rollout of an initial six-week testing programme before the end of the month. In a statement, a spokesperson for the County Council said, "If we're successful in our bid, this testing option will be aimed at anyone who has to leave their home to get to work and where there may be a higher risk of exposure to the virus. This includes local authority frontline workers and those who work in early years settings such as childminders and private nurseries, retail staff including supermarkets, construction and maintenance workers, transport workers and volunteers including those supporting local authorities and emergency services in providing a welfare response to local residents." Dr. Simon Bryant, the Hampshire Director for Public Health, previously said those who test positive will be asked to self-isolate and take a PCR test. He added, "We know that one in three people with the virus may not have symptoms, and therefore it's crucial that we have a testing option available that supports asymptomatic people to access testing quickly and easily." Residents who've had their COVID-19 vaccination are being urged to keep following the rules. Hampshire County Council and the NHS are reminding residents who've received their vaccine that it's vital to keep following the rules of hands, face, space to avoid putting others at risk. Dr. Barbara Rushton, Clinical Chair, Southeastern Hampshire, and Hampshire and Isle of Wight Partnership of Clinical Commissioning Groups, said, The vaccination programme is continuing to roll out over the weeks and months ahead, with more and more people benefiting. The vaccine is being offered to those in the priority groups first before being rolled out to the rest of the population, and you will be contacted when it's your turn to receive the vaccine, either by your GP practice or the National Booking Service, and you'll be advised how to book an appointment. However, it will take time to vaccinate everyone, so in the meantime, please continue to follow government guidance to protect the NHS and save lives.
World Wetland Day and why these habitats are precious. The 2nd of February marked World Wetlands Day, celebrating these precious habitats which are found all around the globe. This year is the 50th anniversary of the adoption of the International Convention on Wetlands, which promoted better protection of wetland sites. Wetland is a confusing term because the habitats it describes are so varied. A pond in your garden is a wetland, albeit a small one, but so is the vast floodplain of the Pantano in South America, for example. Wetlands is a general term for any area that is at least partially submerged or flooded with water, either permanently or seasonally. Ponds, lakes, marshes, mangroves and estuaries are all wetlands. Wetland habitats are important in a number of ways. They provide a habitat for a huge range of wildlife, including many threatened series, with an estimated 40% of the world's wildlife living and breeding in wetlands. In Hampshire, this could be waterfowls, kingfishers and otters, all making a comeback as we restore their wetland homes. These habitats also reduce flood risk and control other effects relating to climate change, like stopping temperature fluctuation. Some wetlands, peat bogs and mudflats in particular, are especially good at capturing carbon from the atmosphere. Millions of people rely on these habitats for their livelihoods, with jobs from fishing to tourism dependent on them. And of course, for many of us, they provide access to nature and wild spaces, boosting mental and physical well-being. Despite all the many benefits they provide, wetland habitats are disappearing. Not only are they being drained and destroyed to make way for development, but humans are also using more fresh water than ever before. We use and waste far more than the planet can replenish, putting pressure on wetlands. Luckily, the tide is starting to turn, with some of the biggest wetlands in Europe now being managed for conservation and wildlife. There is still a lot of work to be done, especially stopping the pollution of freshwater habitats like rivers and streams, and stopping the colossal waste from leaky pipes and loos. Wetlands are a vital part of a connected and healthy landscape with thriving wildlife populations.
Public asked again on airport growth. A public consultation over plans to expand the runway at Southampton Airport is now underway as revised proposals have been unveiled. Airport bosses said the expansion of the runway by 164 metres could see new flights to destinations such as Cyprus, Frankfurt, Stockholm, Copenhagen, Barcelona, Prague and Milan. The news comes as in newly published documents, airport leaders highlighted the impact of the collapse of Flybe. They said the current runway length prevents many airlines from operating their fleet from the site. But campaigners say they continue to believe that the costs of development to local people and the environment are outweighed by the benefits. According to new data, without the runway extension in 2027, the airport would have about 1 million passengers per annum, but the figure could double if the plans to expand the runway go ahead. In official documents, airport bosses said it's highly unlikely the airport could return to the level of operations it had before the collapse of Flybe if the plans are refused. They added, Southampton Airport's updated business plan estimates the break-even point is 1.2 million passengers per annum. While some of the services previously offered by Flybe have since been picked up by other airlines, the limitation of the current runway length prevents many airlines from operating their fleet from the site, which in turn restricts the number of airlines that are able to take up and operate the flights that Flybe previously operated from the site. But a spokesperson for the airport expansion opposition said, "We accept the loss of Flybe represents difficulties for the airport, but the documents provided on the planning site do not include actual evidence that it will go bust without the extension. The airport has been consistently pessimistic about the possibility of attracting alternative airlines to backfill Flybe's routes."
And this is an article titled "Search for Volunteers." Hampshire-based charity Brendan Care Clubs is looking for volunteers to help them make a difference to the lives of older people in the community. Brendan Care Clubs aims to bring joy and friendship to 1,500 older people through its network of over 90 clubs across Hampshire and Dorset, thus preventing loneliness and isolation. The clubs have been temporarily closed since March 2020, and with many members living alone, Brendan Care has been helping to maintain the positive connections and friendships they enjoy through their regular clubs. Volunteers have made over 13,000 contacts to members as part of the community support service. There have also been 238 virtual club meetings and 59 digital connection sessions. The community support service has received such positive feedback from members that it will be a permanent part of the Brendan Care Club's service. This means that when the clubs reopen, and some members feel unable to visit or they need extra support from time to time, Brendan Care will be there for them. Demand for basic digital skills has also increased, and Brendan Care will continue to offer the friendship support to get members and volunteers connected if they want to be. But to continue the service, more volunteers are needed. Christine Walker, 76, a Brendan Care Club's volunteer, lives in Winchester and discovered volunteering after she retired from a career in teaching, latterly as an assistant head teacher. After several years of volunteering in information and advice roles, Christine joined Brendan Care in 2019, where she uses her skills and experience to inform club members about benefits and Brendan Care's Access Fund. When the pandemic started in March last year, and with all the clubs temporarily suspended, Christine turned her hand to telephone support, keeping a team of volunteers keeping in regular contact with members at home. Sam Agnew, head of Brendan Care Club, said, "I am really pleased that the community support service will be continuing, as we've had such positive feedback from our members. I cannot thank our current volunteers enough. They have done such a sterling job in keeping everyone connected during the past 10 months. We look forward to welcoming more volunteers so we continue and expand our service. To learn more about Brendan Care Clubs and volunteering, please call 01962 857 099.
MP's plea for schools. The MP for Winchester and Chandlers Ford has once again pushed the case for schools to fully reopen during a debate in the House of Commons. Steve Brine told Secretary of State for Health and Social Care Matt Hancock that ministers had to recognise the damage being done and let the success of vaccine rollout be matched with a plan for getting children back in school. The MP, who has been among those leading the debate on this subject, has received significant representation from concerned parents and last week told the Prime Minister Boris Johnson they are increasingly alarmed about their children's physical and mental health. Mr. Brine said, "The government's acceptance last week that the release of our society, rightly starting with our schools, should move in lockstep with the success of the vaccine rollout was very welcome." He also asked Mr. Hancock if he could assure parents we will follow an increasing number of countries around Europe and in the UK and stick to the principle that as the vulnerable groups are protected, we reopen the schools. The Health Secretary gave a resolute yes, of course, in response as news broke that Scotland will begin reopening its schools straight after half term. Mr. Bryan has called for teachers and school staff, as well as early years staff, to be vaccinated in the second phase of the programme after February the 15th.
And we've seen record call-outs for the air ambulance. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance responded to 1,577 call-outs by air and road in 2020, its second highest yearly total on record. The annual figure shows 685 fewer individual operations when compared to 2019, but despite there being fewer cars on the roads, the numbers accounted for in 2020 still eclipsed those witnessed in 2018. Around 27% of last year's call-outs were to cardiac arrests. Road traffic collisions accounted for a total of 21%. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance Deputy CEO Sherry Williams-Ellen said, "These figures demonstrate the fundamental need for our life-saving service. To surpass the number of call-outs we received in 2018, while much of the nation spent long periods of time indoors, is simply staggering. Throughout the pandemic, our doctors, specialist paramedics and pilots have continued to provide the most seriously ill and injured people in our region with the most advanced critical care available. I am beyond proud of the way in which our charity has responded to the health crisis and the subsequent demands placed upon the team. Every step of the way, however, we've been backed up by our incredibly generous donors. Without them, none of what we do would be possible."
Bus chief retiring after 5 decades. He dedicated his whole career to bus engineering, and now Paul Den is to retire from his managerial role at Stagecoach Depot in Winchester. In 2020, he celebrated his 50 years of service to the company. Richard Smith, engineering director, said Paul has accrued over 50 years' experience within the bus industry, having worked his way from apprentice to manager. "He's been such a valued member of the team with many years of experience, knowledge and dedication, and so will be missed by me and his colleagues. We wish him the very best for a long and happy retirement." Simon Drury will replace Paul as engineering manager for Winchester and Andover. He completed engineering apprenticeships with BAE Systems and Southern Vectis in the early 2000s, and has experience in both the PCV and the HGV sectors. Previously, Simon was Deputy Engineering Manager at Bromley Depot in London, and before that he was Assistant Engineering Manager at Basingstoke until earlier in 2020. Richard added, "We're delighted to welcome Simon back to Stagecoach South. His extensive engineering knowledge will be invaluable in our commitment to continue modernising and improving our services and vehicles that we provide to our customers across Andover and Winchester." And there's a lovely picture of smiling Paul Den on his retirement. I would imagine after 50 years looking after buses, he deserves a long and satisfactory retirement.
Plus, of course, a bus pass.
Plus a bus pass.
A council investment. Hampshire County Council has an unexpected investment on the cards, which, by the way, will be a pun. The local authority's pension fund, which has 178,000 scheme members, will join Moonpig's private equity magnates as a winner. Founded by former Nick Jenkins from BBC's Dragon's Den, the greetings card company plans to raise up to £422 million from initial public offering next month. That would value it at £1.2 billion, handing investors a tidy windfall. The internet retailer was bought by private equity firm Exponent in 2016, and the pandemic has boosted its fortunes greatly. Moonpig added 1 million customers during the first lockdown. Its revenue has rocketed from $176 million in the first 12 months to April 2020 to $156 million in just 6 months to last October. Its initial public offering saw shares cost 350 pence, but the stock surged by more than a quarter as conditional dealings kicked off, with shares opening as high as 450 pence. Moonpig placed £491.2 million of shares on the market, around 41% of the group, raising gross proceeds of £20 million. And that's an investment by Hampshire County Council Pension Fund.
Thank you, and that now concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams, and thanks to our reader, Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.